his bird note. Listen to this song. It's a male Montezuma Oropendula displaying for a female while he swings from a tree branch in a Central American forest. Today, he's holding forth in a tree bedecked with 20 or more Oropendula nests. The nests are intricately woven sacks, hanging 3 feet or more from the branches. Oropendulas are not just colonial nesters. They're very choosy about the trees in which they nest. They prefer a tall tree, separate from other trees, to discourage troops of hungry monkeys that are wary of crossing open ground. The female Oropendulas weave their nests near the tips of branches so slender that their limberness makes access difficult for nest raiders. It takes about 10 days to complete the nest. Oropendulas also favor trees that bear large nests of wasps, whose stinging attacks deter both potential nest predators and parasitic insects. The male Oropendula's connection to the colony is strong, and he'll sing throughout the nesting season. And what a song it is! For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Support for Bird Note is provided by Jerry Tone and Martha Wyckoff from Seattle, Washington, and generous listeners around the world.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, British Columbia. We are diverse, independent, and yours.
Morning, everybody. Welcome to Back Porch Bluegrass. I'm your host, Paul Trendworth, and it's morning here. It may not be morning where you're listening, but that's fine. Hope you're going to enjoy the program today. Got a very special program lined up for you, but we're going to kick it off with some good music from Joe Mullins and the Radio Ramblers from their album Another Day from Life. And we're going to hear the theme song, or the title song, Another Day from Life, from Joe Mullins. This album was recorded in 2014. Great album, excellent music, so have a listen.
For some, a day of strife. All in all, it's another day from life. Saw a shaggy little dog as he chased a speeding car. Saw the firemen on the scene as they fought the raging fire. Saw a long-haired bearded boy give a pretty girl a glance. Heard a man on bended knee begging for another chance. And life goes on, it's just another day. A day of happiness for some a day of strife. All in all, it's another day from life. some for some a day of strife. All in all, it's another day from life.
That was Joe Mullins and the Radio Ramblers, Another Day from Life. God, they're a good band. I have in the studio with me a good friend, luthier, repairman, general, all-round fix-it-up person, Keith McMillan. Good morning, Keith.
Good morning, Paul.
I've got Keith in here to the studio to participate in the program, and we're going to discuss setting up your instrument so you can play better. I need a serious setup in all my instruments at present. And Keith has a shop in Hamilton from where he does this sort of work. So we'll talk to him a little bit later on, but it's going to be great having him here, and you're going to find out today how to set up or what to do to set up your guitar and your mandolins. Meanwhile, we're going to listen to some fine old bluegrass from Curly Seckler in 1971. Curly Seckler, who most people will remember as an integral part of the Flat and Scruggs band in the early and mid-1950s. He was a fine singer in his own right, and he recorded an album in 1971 on the county label, and he had the Shenandoah Cut-Ups back him. Curly played guitar and sang lead. Billy Edwards played banjo, John Palmer on bass, Tater Tate on fiddle, and Herschel Sizemore on mandolin. And they did some lovely bluegrass. I've been reading up on Earl Scruggs in the last few weeks and following some of that early Flat and Scruggs music, and Curly Seckler came to mind, so I'm delighted to have the opportunity to play a track for you. Here's Moonlight on My Cabin, Curly Seckler and the Shenandoah Cut-Ups.
On my cabin I'll be waiting. When it's moonlight on the pine trees I'll be there. When it's moonlight on my cabin I'll be coming. When it's moonlight on the pine trees I'll be there. Mountain home I am, heading up the hillside never more to roam. When it's moonlight on my cabin I'll be coming. When it's moonlight on the pine trees I'll be there. Lonesome pine is waiting, and up at Burwills they sang their lonesome song. When it's moonlight on my cabin I'll be coming. When it's moonlight on the pine trees I'll be there.
Some classic bluegrass there from Curly Seckler. You like that, Keith?
That's lovely.
Very, very, very relaxed. He was. They liked having Curly in the band. He also did a lot of the MC work in Flat and Scruggs. Lester was a wonderful MC and sort of always spoke beautifully, but Curly did his own little segment of the show when they did a show, and he was very popular. Mm-hmm. So he's a great singer. We're going to hear another band now that I really enjoy, a band called Sawmill Road. Road. And I heard about this band through Mark Miracle, a mandolin player who's visited New Zealand several times as part of X-Train and as part of the Sonoran Dogs. And this band, based in Arizona, really, and Southern California, Steve Spurgeon on bass, Bruce Johnson on fiddle, Charles Edsel on guitar, and Dick Brown on banjo, together with Mark on mandolin and tenor vocals. They do some wonderful music. I saw a reunion. The band had sort of finished playing, and in 2017 they did a reunion set at Grass Valley Festival, and it was very popular. There's a big crowd there, and the guys just really played superbly. They play some lovely music, and the song I've selected is one called Lovebird. I think we're all ready to go. Here it comes.
With this ring, how they went, it's a promise true. He looked into her eyes and said, honey, I love you. No room for doubt in a heart complete. She swore she'd love no other, and he said, you're all I need. In each other's arms through the whole night long, they would listen out the window to the mountain lovebird song. But love's sweet and warm can grow dark and cold if a man feels chained by a little band of gold. And there's a lovebird saying,
listening to Back Porch Bluegrass with Paul Trenwith. My name is Annette, and I am recording this at the southernmost tip of Lake Michigan in Gary, Indiana, USA.
Well, I have in the studio with me Keith McMillan, as I said before. Welcome to Back Porch Bluegrass, Keith.
Thank you, Paul.
You've been repairing instruments for a long time. Tell us a little bit of your background on that. When did you start doing that? Did you train as a luthier? And give us some background.
Well, I've been doing it professionally for just over 30 years now. Previous to that, I worked in the museum in Hamilton, which was a good background for all kinds of interesting things.
And, yes.
But as a kid, I built instruments. And while I was at the museum, in fact, I built myself a mandolin and enjoyed that so much I started doing a bit of repair work on the kitchen table at night.
Did you build that mandolin before you started in
Yes.
Oh, okay. I didn't
realize that. That was built on the kitchen table, literally. And gradually became sort of frustrated with working at the museum and just decided to set up my own workshop, initially building as well as repairing instruments. And in the meantime, the building has gone by the by because I was just too busy and it was kind of doing my head in, and something had to go. So the building of instruments went. So for 30-odd years, I've been doing all kinds of work, but probably about half of that work would be, and certainly in terms of the numbers of instruments, would be setups, is what we call it. And that's like taking an instrument and adjusting everything to make it as playable as possible.
That you've really opened my eyes to that sort of thing, and now every time I pick up an instrument, I sort of think, oh, I need to take it to Keith McMillan to get it set up and adjusted, because the difference between playing an instrument that's hard work and playing an instrument that invites you to play nicely is just wonderful.
It's an enormous difference, and I love the little smile that I get from people when they pick up their mandolin or guitar or their banjo and they think, yes, this is what it's supposed to be like.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do most instruments have serious problems, or are they all relatively minor?
They're usually minor. Every now and then you run into a serious issue that's not the end of the world often. It's just a matter of making a bit of a compromise with something else to make it playable.
What's the sort of things that we look at first?
Okay, well, you look at any instrument, and I have in my hot hands a mandolin, and the things which are adjustable and which matter are the neck shape, which is controllable with a truss rod. In most,
you mean the neck shape as parallel to the string?
Yes, the amount of curve that there is in the neck, and the perfect neck should be nearly straight, but a small concave curve relative to the strings. Okay, right. So that's one. The height of the nut, which is the thing with six or eight grooves in it down by the tuning machines. It's usually white and made of plastic or bone.
Yeah.
The height of those grooves is critical. Then the actual height of the strings above the fingerboard, which is determined by the height of the bridge, or the height on a guitar, the height of the saddle, which is the white bone thing that is sitting inside the bridge. And then finally, the actual position of that bridge will determine how accurately the instrument plays in tune with itself. On acoustic guitars, there's not much you can do. On electric guitars, you can move everything. On mandolins, the whole bridge moves, so you can make it play in tune by just putting the bridge in the right place.
Same as on banjos.
Yeah. Exactly. And so those are the things we've got to play with, and it's important to do them in the right order. So the first thing I do is just pick up the instrument and have a little feel of it, have a little play on it, and see if, you know, sometimes I'm delighted to say to people, it's perfect.
Yes.
Go away, don't pay me any money.
Yeah, and work harder at your playing.
Yeah, but, you know, I'd have to say that doesn't happen very often. Yeah. So we need to get all of those things right.
Okay, so I've just handed you my 1982 Gilchrist mandolin, which you're now holding in your hand, and most bluegrassers would drool at the mouth and have their teeth removed so they could have one of those.
Literally killed for it, I think.
Yes, yes.
Yep, so that's what I've got here. So the first adjustment we always need to make is the shape of the neck, or the adjustment of the truss rod. If you've got a truss rod, that is. Some older mandolins, like old Gibsons, don't have one.
Yes.
But on the plus side, they don't usually need much adjustment because they're fairly robust necks.
Yes.
So either using a straight edge or using the strings as a straight edge, and at this point it's important to have a fresh set of strings on the instrument of the tension that is going to be ultimately used.
Right.
And then I adjust the truss rod until the neck is nearly perfectly straight. In the case of mandolins, the neck is so short that actually, you know, to the untrained eye, it would look straight. But there is a tiny little bit of relief there.
Whereabouts is the relief seen? About the fifth fret, or about the seventh, or about the octave? Or
it pretty much over the whole length of the neck, but from about the octave fret upwards is normally straight, and then from the octave fret up to the nut is a gentle, slight curve, yeah. Centred around the fifth fret.
Yeah.
So we adjust that if we can until we've got it right. Okay, yes. Next step is the height of the strings at the nut. Now, I have sets of files of all different widths with lovely rounded edges that mimic the shape of the string. And you can use feeler gauges above the first fret, but I do it by holding the string down at the third fret.
Yeah, yeah.
And at that point, you can see by how much the string clears the first fret.
Yes. And what are you aiming for?
I'm aiming for it to just miss the first fret, which thus puts the nut more or less in line with the frets, but a touch higher. Certainly not a touch lower, because if it was low, the string would cling against the first fret. So one by one, I go through the strings with my little nut files and lower it until, when I do that little test, holding the string at the third fret, it just misses the first fret.
Okay.
And then when I'm happy with that, we go on to the overall string height.
Do you take all the strings off to do this operation, or you leave the strings on while you're doing that?
No, I leave the strings on. I used to loosen the strings, lift them out of the nut, do a little filing, put them in, tune them up. But, of course, you break a lot of strings that way.
Mm.
So now I just lift them aside with a pick. I've got a purple pick. I've used the same one for years and years. Yeah. And I just ease the string up and across and out of the way of the groove in the nut while I do each one. And they never break. And you can put a little bit of pencil lead in the groove when you've finished, which assists the string to slide evenly through the nut and stay in tune and tune smoothly.
Because that groove in the nut has to sort of have its high point on the fretboard side, I guess.
That's exactly right. It's got to have a clean front edge on the side facing the body of the instrument, so that the string vibrates to that point and not beyond.
Mm. So you've got the left-hand end so far sorted.
So we've got the neck shape adjusted perfectly. We've got the nut adjusted perfectly. Okay, so now we're looking at the string height. In the case of this mandolin, we have a little wheel on each side of the bridge.
Oh, that's what those little doofers are.
Yes, with which we can adjust the bridge up and down. In the case of a steel string guitar, you've got a bone or a plastic saddle, which the only way to adjust that is to take it out and file it down.
Mm.
Usually there's a pickup underneath it in the case of a steel string guitar, and so you've got to be fairly careful filing it down to maintain the integrity of the pickup, so the bottom of that bone saddle must be absolutely flat. And at this point, I do most of my thinking with a ruler. I measure the height of the string above the 12th fret, both the bass side and the treble side, and I have figures in my head for what we'd call a low action, which suits most people. You have to bear in mind that everyone has a different requirement. So if someone plays their guitar heavily and loudly, and that's their style, they have to have a slightly more curved neck.
Yes.
And they have to have a slightly higher bridge to allow rattle-free playing. I like a reasonably low action on my mandolin. By being cunning, I can be both loud and slick.
Yes. Good.
So then I make those final adjustments and then check that it's playing in tune finally.
Yes.
By comparing the open note with the 12th fret note, which should be exactly one octave higher, and you can easily hear that, and move the bridge if necessary in the case of a mandolin.
These new little clip-on tuners have made it wonderful for accurate tuning too, and
fantastic. Fantastic. In the case of a steel string guitar, say, you obviously can't go moving the bridge, but what you can do is move the point of the bridge that each string bears upon.
Right.
And you can, before you do the final lowering into the correct action, you can sort of do that little intonation check and think to yourself, okay, that bridge point needs to be moved a little closer to the fingerboard, or it needs to be moved a little bit back.
Yeah.
In which case, I'd take the material that I'm removing from the bridge from the top, which will allow me to control exactly where that each string bridges.
Right. Okay, now, that's assuming there's nothing wrong with the instrument itself, but what about worn frets and things like that?
They're always a little bit worn, unless it's a brand new instrument. Usually what that means is you can't quite get as low an action as you otherwise would.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to compromise by allowing a little more curve in the neck, because the wear is always going to be at the at the nut end of the neck. And just a hint more curve will often allow sort of semi-worn frets to play cleanly.
Is that 1982 mandolin with a fair amount of use got original frets, or have you replaced them?
No, it's on its third set of frets. Yeah.
Oh, well, okay, because they all got little string grooves in them and things like that, and you don't get such a clear, accurate note.
Mandolins actually get a lot of fret wear because, A, they're quite small frets, B, they're quite heavy strings, and C, you have to play them hard.
Yes, you do.
You have to hold the strings down very hard with your left hand and play quite hard with your right hand in order to get a clear sound out of them.
What about things like the tuning pegs? They last forever?
Pretty much they do. The best thing you can do for tuners is a little bit of lubricant.
Yeah, of course.
You know, I don't know how many times I've had people bring in instruments and they're convinced that the tuners are worn out and they want a new set. And I said, have you tried some oil?
Mm.
And a little bit of Vaseline or, you know, petroleum jelly wiped into the gears. Mm. Or actually, I often just use CRC or WD-40 very, very sparingly. And they're as good as new.
Yeah, right. And you also do work like replacing the bindings around the edges and repairing cracks and that you get from whacking the cap with the mandolin and things like that.
All of that kind of stuff. I've got two or three major repair jobs running at my workshop at the moment. One is a near new Martin D28 that suffered an impact and a couple of cracks along the front and a big ding in the finish. So I'm
well, I think that's good. Hit a chord on your mandolin.
So this is my.
Ooh, that's a good loud chord.
That's my 1982 Gilchrist.
Sounds great. Well, I think we probably ought to play something. I have a guitar in here that...
gosh, that's a coincidence.
Yes. you're probably going to have to look at it and tell me that I need to bring it in and have some open heart surgery on it.
it needs a neck reset, Paul. Yeah. I've been telling you that for years.
So do I. Okay, we've got the instruments out. What should we play, Keith?
Let's play a tune called Hikawai Hornpipe. Paul and I are in two different bands together, and we use this tune in both of them. It's a tune written by me.
I'm not sure that I've ever played guitar on it before. I usually play banjo. In the Hamilton County, I play banjo on it, rather panically. And Real Men, I play bass on it. So
yeah,
here's a first place in guitar.